Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members, lovely folks like you. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
Welcome to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gasco. It is Ocean Week here at Coast Range Radio HQ. You know, all of us in the Northwest love our ocean, but we often don't show it the love that it truly deserves. Ocean conservation is chronically underfunded and underprioritized, but the newly funded Oregon Ocean Alliance is aiming to change that and bring much-needed attention and resources to our ocean and coastal ecosystems. To talk about all that and more, I'm joined by two great guests, Annie Merrill of Oregon Shores and Joe Liebezeit of Bird Alliance of Oregon. They are also co-chairs of the Oregon Ocean Alliance. Real quick, before we get started, you can find all of our shows for free on any podcast app or at bit.ly/crrpodcast. My show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Okay, Annie Merrill and Joe Liebezeit, welcome back to Coast Range Radio.
Thanks, Michael.
Hi, thanks so much for having us.
I'm so happy to have you both back. Before we get into specific campaigns and legislation, and we are going to get into some specific pieces of legislation that you all are supporting and how listeners can get involved and help support those efforts. But before we do that, let's start with the Oregon Ocean Alliance. Could one of you, maybe we'll start with Annie, give us a quick overview on the Ocean Alliance? You know, what is the gap or need that the Alliance is filling, and how can listeners find out more?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Alliance is a group of 9 member organizations, including many organizations that you all are probably familiar with. So the Nature Conservancy, Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition, the Bird Alliance of Oregon, Surf Rider Foundation, the Alaska Alliance, Coast Range Association, Seven Capes Bird Alliance, and Environment Oregon and Oceana. So we essentially all work collectively to advance the protection of Oregon's ocean and coastal ecosystems. Many of our organizations have been working together for a really long time on different conservation projects. We have long been supporters of the marine reserve system in Oregon. But we essentially all came together to figure out how we could build more collective power and kind of visibility for ocean conservation at the legislative level, through the governor's office. We're also seeing all kinds of federal funding coming down from the Inflation Reduction Act and several bills that were passed during the Biden administration that we were trying to figure out, like, how do we bring some of that money to Oregon and make sure that we're really capitalizing on those opportunities for ocean conservation here. So we figured we would just, you know, leverage each individual organization's strengths and networks and try and figure out how we could all come together to build more power. Is there anything you want to add to that, Joe?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, I've been working on marine coastal issues in Oregon for 13 years now. And, you know, repeatedly over the years, we've just seen, when we go to the legislature, we've seen other groups being more organized, you know, climate coalition folks, wildlife coalition folks, just, you know, being organized and having real leverage in the legislature. And so we wanted to kind of recreate that. A lot of the ocean issues just kind of fall by the wayside with our legislators, but they're so important. You know, everyone in Oregon loves to go and visit the coast, but we want to protect these places and enjoy them at the same time. So this is our attempt to form a coalition and alliance to really make some headway in, yeah, making that balance of protecting our really important ocean and coastal habitats, but also, you know, ensuring that people can enjoy these places and we can have a robust economy in the local space on ocean.
If folks are liking what they're hearing, if people want to learn more from what we talk about, where do people find the Oregon Ocean Alliance?
OregonOceanAlliance.org.
Great. And I think that you all have a mailing list that people can sign up for and more information about all of the topics we're going to talk about today.
All on our website.
Exactly. So with that said, let's jump right into it. You all have a number of issues and campaigns you're working on, but it seems like rocky habitats and eelgrass are the top priorities right now. So I'm thinking we'll start with those. And we will get to the legislative session in a minute because you all, as I mentioned, are supporting great bills on both rocky habitats and eelgrass protections. But before we get into that, let's just give folks a quick primer on the issues themselves. So, first off, tell us about eelgrass. You know, what is it? Where is it? Why is it so cool and important?
Yeah, absolutely. First, just to backpedal just a little bit. So the Oregon Ocean Alliance has a number of priorities that we've all collectively decided on with all of our organizations. There are issues that we all care about. And the two kind of tiers that I'd like to think of is like we have habitat priorities related to very specific ocean habitats that offer a lot of benefits for biodiversity, ecosystem services, et cetera. And then funding priorities. How do we connect funding streams to ocean conservation? For habitat priorities, two of the top priorities we identified for the last year or so have been rocky habitats and eelgrass. So eelgrass meadows are kind of my specialty. I studied eelgrass during my master's research at Oregon State University. And eelgrass meadows are seagrass meadows that are found in Oregon's estuaries. They're extremely important habitat. They're considered nursery habitat because juvenile fish utilize eelgrass meadows during the most vulnerable stages of their lives. And so eelgrass meadows, you know, directly support full fisheries populations out in the ocean. So we need healthy nursery habitats and healthy eelgrass meadows in order to support entire marine food webs. Eelgrass meadows also sequester a lot of carbon. It's estimated that it's up to 35 times the rate of terrestrial tropical rainforests, which is really crazy. They also, you know, stabilize sediment and reduce erosion from storm surges. They also locally buffer ocean acidification when the grass is photosynthesizing. So for all of those reasons, you know, the collective biodiversity benefit and then the climate resilience benefit that eelgrass meadows make them critical habitat in our estuaries. But the problem is eelgrass is declining around the world. And in Oregon, there are definitely signs that this is occurring too. After the marine heat wave a couple years back in 2015 through 17, there was a massive die-off in eelgrass meadows in the Coos Bay area in South Slough. Researchers found, you know, in some sites there was almost entirely no eelgrass left, 95% decline or more. And in other places, eelgrass is just shifting in distribution because of changes in our ocean and changes in our watershed, particularly surrounding water quality. And so the problem is in Oregon, we don't actually know that much about our eelgrass resources in terms of the full extent and distribution of our eelgrass meadows. There's just really inconsistent mapping that occurs that doesn't really allow us to track if there is an immediate risk or like a massive die-off or loss of eelgrass meadows. And so essentially we identified a gap where collectively we thought it would be really important for the state to kind of take a more coordinated, proactive approach to not only monitor eelgrass, but to set conservation targets and make sure that we're on track to protecting our eelgrass resources before it's too late, before there's a massive die-off, before we lose our eelgrass meadows like much of the East Coast has.
Yeah. And so we'll get into in a minute how that, you know, specifically relates to the legislation. But what I'm hearing is eelgrass meadows are just this incredibly beneficial resource for so many reasons that we understand their benefits, but we don't understand what's happening to them and how we can stop it. And so that's the issue you're solving for there. Seems very important. We'll get back to that in a minute. So let's talk about rocky habitats. Joe, so all the same questions to you. What are rocky habitats? Where are they? What makes them so special?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Rocky habitats are headlands and sea stacks and intertidal habitats along our coastline in Oregon. About 40% of our coastline is rocky habitat. And I think, you know, most of your listeners, especially folks on the coast, are well acquainted with these places. And, you know, Oregonians and people from really all over the world love to come to Oregon. And one of the big places they love to go is to our coast and to enjoy some of our really majestic, iconic rocky habitats, places like Haystack Rock. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of people a year are visiting these places. On the Central Coast, Cape Lookout is another great place, or Seal Rock on the South Coast. Some of my favorite rocky habitats are on the South Coast, because the South Coast, fewer people go. You have these amazing offshore reefs like Mack Reef and Cape Blanco. So these are just these incredible places that people love to go to, a lot of tourism. It helps support our tourism economy, but they're also incredibly important places for wildlife. And of course, I'm a bird guy. So, you know, over 1 million nesting birds, colonial nesting seabirds, nest on our rocky habitats off the coast of Oregon and on the shoreline as well. There's a bird called the black oyster catcher, which is a shorebird that we studied for many years at the Bird Alliance, and have found that they have a really small population, about 500 or 600 birds living in Oregon, and they're hanging on pretty well, but they, you know, very vulnerable species, and they're totally tied to rocky habitats. So that's just one kind of case example of a wildlife that really depends on rocky habitats. Also marine mammals, you know, there are a lot of pupping grounds on offshore rocky areas for harbor seals, for stellar sea lions, and even elephant seals. A few places on the Oregon coast, elephant seals will visit. I think similar to eelgrass, as Annie was saying, is amazing nursery ground for commercially important fish. The same is true in rocky habitats. You know, we'll have a lot of different rock fish species, which are really important for our fisheries here in Oregon. A lot of those places are important for adults as well as young rockfish to grow and thrive. And so with that, you know, some of the challenges that rocky habitats face, as I mentioned before, how many people come to these places, which is great. But at the same time, sometimes there are lots of impacts to these habitats that people are the cause of, that we are really concerned about. So, for example, you know, people love to tide pool, and I love to tide pool myself, but there is a right way to do it and a wrong way. And, you know, getting the message out to the public on how can you respectfully go and have a great time and enjoy the life in the tide pool is something that we want to promote. Also, you know, people love to have their dogs on the beach, but in some places it's not good to have them off leash. They can really disturb wildlife like birds and mammals. Drones are another issue as well. More and more people, recreational users of drones, are coming and not really realizing that their drone is perceived as a predator to a lot of things, like, you know, nesting birds, for example. So we just want to have a better way of dealing with that. A second issue is climate. Marine heat waves are increasing on the coast. Research from OSU in the past few years has indicated that the impacts on the intertidal habitat from these more frequent heat waves is really causing a real challenge with ocean resiliency in terms of these habitats, maybe at some point reaching a tipping point where they're really going to go downhill. So we're really concerned about that. What we want to see is these sites managed in a way that, again, balances people having fun and recreating and protecting wildlife, fish, and the habitats. That's kind of what I think the next step in this discussion will be, is talking about the bills and the policies around that.
Perfect segue. I actually want to talk about some of the other priorities, but let's cover these bills in the legislative session first. Since you were just talking, Joe, why don't you keep going on what the legislation that you all are pushing around rocky habitats is, and how folks can get involved. And I think that the pathways for people to help out are going to be pretty similar for both bills. But, you know, just give us a quick legislative overview on this.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. So this legislative session, our rocky habitat bill is House Bill 3587. And that bill is focused around increasing the capacity both from the community level and from the agency level to steward these sites in a way that we can educate the public when they visit these sites, the best way to enjoy them without having undue impact on the habitats and wildlife. And at the same time, ensuring that the agencies, in particular, in this case, Department of Land Conservation Development, has the resources to ensure these sites have proper site management plans developed, and that they are enforced.
How about you, Annie? Tell us a little bit more about the legislation with the eelgrass bill.
Okay, yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, we saw this gap where we really need the state to come together with some sort of coordinated approach to addressing eelgrass conservation and protecting what we have. So what we put forward is what we affectionately call the Eelgrass Action Bill. It's House Bill 3580. And this bill would develop a interagency task force that would be tasked with assessing the status of eelgrass meadows across the state, also recommending conservation and restoration targets for the state to meet by 2040. And then there's all kinds of gaps and barriers to policy and identifying research needs that the task force would essentially have to work through. So this task force, we designed it to be done the Oregon way. We really wanted to make sure that there were diverse voices and all the experts in the room to make sure that this could be done. So the task force would be a two-year process. It includes agencies that have any kind of jurisdiction over eelgrass or expertise in eelgrass. So that includes the Department of Land Conservation and Development, the Department of State Lands, ODFW, et cetera. Also, we wanted to make sure that all tribal nations could be included, particularly because eelgrass is essential fish habitat, in particular for salmon, which of course is very important to many coastal and inland tribal nations, as well as scientists, conservation groups, stakeholders that care about our estuaries or have some kind of stake in the outcome of this task force. So that includes fishermen and ports and industry, the tourism industry, for instance. All of these folks would get together and figure out a path forward for eelgrass conservation. And I do want to note that restoration is another really important piece to this, because right now there's not very much guidance on best practices for restoration in Oregon. There's not very much restoration even occurring. And restoration has been typically unsuccessful in a lot of instances. So there needs to be some kind of guidance forward to figure out how and where we should be strategically restoring eelgrass meadows.
And I know a question you've often gotten, because I've been in meetings with legislators with you when they have asked this, is why a task force? Why not just do the protections?
I think that a task force is the best approach forward because it is very complicated how our estuaries are managed. Like I said, there are multiple agencies that have some kind of role in the management of or the monitoring and mapping of eelgrass. And so we really need coordination from all three of those agencies. You know, there's all kinds of policy gaps and barriers that need to be figured out. There's environmental challenges that need to be discussed. You know, like what do we do about poor water quality impacting these meadows versus what do we do about restoration and mitigation practices to protect eelgrass meadows from development projects? Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many pieces, and the task force will help parse through all of that and figure out the best strategies forward, and then essentially the task force will develop recommendations to the state.
Yeah.
So we're just not ready for a conservation target right off the bat because there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to coordinate folks, and then also to find out what is the status of our existing meadows. How much have we lost?
Yeah. Joe, you had something to add there?
No, I think Annie covered it in her last sentence there. I was just going to say that part of it is just that we don't know a lot about eelgrass in Oregon. And so you can't just go out and start doing the work, because we need to know where to do it, where are the most important places to prioritize. And that's part of what task force should do.
Right. Well put. So what's the status with these bills? What's the barrier to passage? You know, what are the hurdles you're trying to overcome? And most importantly, how can listeners get involved?
Both bills have gone through the first committee, policy committee, and made it through with everyone, every legislator on those committees voting yes and in favor of them, which is great. The big step, though, right, is right now, and will be coming in the next few weeks, is the bills have moved to what's called the Ways and Means Committee, or the Joint Ways and Means Committee, which is the legislators in that committee are charged with making decisions on bills that have a price tag. And our two bills, thankfully, don't have much of a cost when you think of the whole entire Oregon, you know, general fund. We're talking the Rocky Habitat bill is about $600,000 ask over 2 years, and the eelgrass bill, I think, is about $450,000. So we're talking $1 million for these two bills, which will get so much work done in the next 2 years. So we're feeling positive about that, but it's a very, very austere budget session this year for a number of reasons. And part of it is that, you know, Oregon's state budget is a third of it is funded by federal monies. And if those federal monies go away, which could happen from the federal government, as we've all been hearing, there would need to be some backfilling of funding from other parts of the state budget. And so that makes it an already tight budget even tighter this session. And so asking for any money for anything really is going to be a challenge. So I'm going to pass it to Annie to talk about what you can do about it, given this challenge. So go ahead, Annie.
Thanks, Joe. As Joe says, the bills are in the Ways and Means Committee, and we expect that they'll sit there for some time while Ways and Means kind of determines what their priorities are. You know, they need to figure out agency budgets before they tackle specific bills. And then there's kind of different categories for budgets that they're looking at. So ours would fall under natural resource funding. And so what folks can do to help push it along and get both of these bills through the Ways and Means Committee is just to elevate the issue to the Ways and Means Committee members and let them know that this is a priority for Oregonians, that we really want to see this work happen, and that funding these bills would have massive benefits, not just for our coastal ecosystems, but our communities that directly rely on healthy functioning coastal ecosystems for the tourism economy, for fisheries. And then also, you know, any Oregonian who is lucky enough to get to visit the coast values these places. And so one way that folks can get involved quickly is to visit our website at OregonOceanAlliance.org. We have a Take Action page on that website that has a form where you can fill out and send an email directly to Ways and Means Committee members and ask for their support during this phase of the bill process.
I'll just say that both these bills, we've worked really hard this session to get a lot of support behind them. So there are, in the legislature, you get a chief sponsor for your bills, someone to kind of champion the bill. And we were able to get Representative David Gomberg, who's in the Coastal Caucus. But then we worked really hard to get other sponsors on the bill, other legislators that would support it. And it's bipartisan. We've gotten Republicans and Democrats to support both of these bills. We've also worked really hard to get tribes to support these bills. We've got the C.T. Clusi and Coquel tribe to support these bills through written comment. We've also gotten some of the cities on the coast to write letters of support. So we've positioned ourselves really well, but we definitely need your help to kind of try to cross the finish line with these.
I'm glad that you brought in the diverse array of sponsors, the bipartisan nature, how much the conservation community is behind it, as well as some of our coastal Republicans and the tribes. And this really, as far as I understand it, is just a straight up situation of where does it fall on the budget priorities? The more they hear from people that this is a priority, the greater the likelihood of it passing. And it just really comes down to that this year, as in so many years. But certainly, if we have time, we'll get into some of the federal stuff. But it's certainly more so this year. Yeah, again, there's that Take Action page on the OregonOceanAlliance.org. So let's do just a quick speed run, because we're starting to run short on time, on some of the other Alliance priorities, whether it's legislation you're supporting, whether it's other campaigns outside of the legislative cycle.
Yeah, so I already touched on it a little bit earlier on, but essentially, we have noticed over time that the coast and coastal conservation in particular is very under-prioritized and underfunded by the state and by the Oregon legislature. And that was one of the key things that we're hoping to elevate the importance of funding coastal conservation work. Funding for marine issues more broadly is one of our top priorities. And right now we're definitely looking at the legislature for that because we've seen really important programs like the Marine Reserve Program have bills that pass that are unfunded mandates. And we've had threats to Marine Reserve Program funding in the past that we don't want to see that happen. We want to make sure that important conservation programs like our Marine Reserves, you know, maintain funding so that they can grow face all of the challenges that our coastal ecosystems face right now. So, you know, with climate change, environmental degradation, biodiversity loss, et cetera, there's a lot of really big challenges to our coastal environment. So funding is a huge piece of that. I also touched on marine reserves. So if you want to move on to Hecate Bank.
So Hecate Bank and the Hecate Bank complex are these rocky underwater reefs and underwater structures off the central coast of Oregon that cause a lot of upwelling of water and bring up nutrient-rich water. And so it's a really, really productive, one of the most productive places for fish and wildlife offshore compared to anywhere along the West Coast. There are thoughts of potentially a national marine sanctuary being established there in the future. And so we're really in the early stages of trying to like outreach to the public on why this area is so important. A lot of people don't really know about it since it's so far out in the ocean and underwater. And then kind of building momentum over time to have more protection in that area. So that's kind of a longer term goal we have.
Yeah.
But it's still an important place that we need to consider for future protection.
If I can add just one more piece about funding. So something that we have found ourselves prioritizing a lot this legislative session, given the tight budget that we're seeing, we've been advocating a lot for our state agencies that manage coastal resources. We don't want to see these agency budgets cut by any means. They already have, you know, so many other priorities that the governor's office is pushing on them, and or, you know, there's so much that those agencies are working on, and we just want to make sure that the coast remains prioritized, that the coastal programs within those agencies are strengthened. I don't know, one like example of this that I think is important to highlight is the Oregon Coastal Management Program is almost entirely federally funded. And so we really need to see the state prioritize helping that agency become stronger and have more resources to do this important work.
Yeah, so we've had to switch gears in some sense, you know, due to the Trump administration's threat of cutting federal funding. And like Annie says, we've had to like really buckle down and provide more testimony to ensure that these state programs that depend on federal funding can keep going, or else we're in trouble.
Yeah, a lot of defense we're having to play right now, for sure. That's such an important thing to be able to do those quick pivots when the situation arises. Unfortunately, we are running short on time here. There's a lot more we could get into, but maybe we'll just have to have you back, especially Hecate Banks. I think that's an episode in itself. I didn't actually know about that until recently, and it is so fascinating. And you're right, I think that is a long-term project, but definitely a worthy one. So hopefully we can talk more about that later. Before we go, is there anything we've missed? And one more time, just a shout out for how people can get involved and where they should go to take action.
Yeah, for people to take action on these two bills, Rocky Habitat and Eelgrass, please go to the Oregon Ocean Alliance website, oregonoceanalliance.org. And you'll see a take action link. Go on there and you can quickly, within a minute or less, provide your support for these two bills.
The website is also a great place to go for any and all information about the Alliance. There's also a contact us form if you want to get in touch with us and learn more. So everything's on the website.
Annie and Joe, thank you both so much for the work that you do for our oceans. And thank you for talking with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. Coast Range Radio is an independent production. If you like the show, please help me grow the audience by telling your friends about it, following Coast Range Radio on the socials, which, as I always say, even though I hate them, please do it anyway, for me. And best of all, directly share it with at least two people by texting a link to the podcast feed or just telling folks about it. Once again, the show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Reach out anytime with feedback, guest ideas, or just say hi. Thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. Let's make it through this together.
Get K-Rooed up! Get K-Rooed up because it's K-Roo time! Kibu time! Get kibooed up! Get kibooed up because it's kibu time! Kibu!
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.